Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. If you want to listen live, all you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Also, if you want to catch this show on video, be sure to check out Zumo TV, channel 719. That's where you can find Sports Grid's Fantasy Sports Network. Enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening.
And welcome back. It's hour number two of Sports Grid's Fantasy Sports Today. Here we are, 11 to 1 every day right here on sportsgrid.com. If you're watching us on Zumo TV, Pluto TV, or Zoom, Joe and I are here talking fantasy, talking reality with you, getting you through this hard time in sports and in life as well. Just to kind of recap our top stories, Joe, the NBA essentially has put it in stone. July 31st, they're going to return, again, with the asterisk of something crazy happening with this pandemic, which definitely needs to be addressed. But an interesting dynamic, 16 teams, the playoff teams, an additional eight will fight out for those last few spots in the NBA playoffs. They'll play in Orlando. And this seems to be, at least of the major sports that we usually talk about here on the show, the first one to kind of officially be back here.
Yes, and the DFS and gambling world all at one time unite and say, hurrah, yay, sports happening. And look, let's have another 30 days here where everything gets monitored, and then you have time here to put everything in place properly and all the protocols, and then get everybody training up. And it's realistic. I think it's a very realistic expectation here. They've got less than a 60-day window to pull this off, and I think that's smart. I think they're not trying to rush things, because as we've seen some other spots, when they try to rush, what happens? You end up taking two steps back. And that's not what the NBA wants to happen, and it's not what the sports community wants to happen either. So good on the NBA. And let's keep our fingers crossed that everything continues to move forward in the right fashion, because it's going to be a very fun summer of basketball. And, you know, we don't usually have basketball in August, so this is very exciting and different. So I'm looking forward to it, and I know you are too.
Yeah, no, I definitely am. But for now, let's take a look at some NFL props, as we have been doing. You can go back and watch us on demand on YouTube and check all the players that we've discussed. We've, you know, pretty much ran through a lot of the bigger names, but somehow we left out the biggest name from last season. The question is this the next best receiver in the NFL, or was it a one-year wonder? I think it's a fair question to ask. Michael Thomas last year for the New Orleans Saints, he went over 1,400 yards, got closer to 1,800, actually caught 1,700 yards worth of receiving yards last season. And so FanDuel has his total this year at 1,404, which is essentially the total that he had 2 years ago, 1,405, which, you know, seems about right. 2017, remember, he's just been climbing this ladder over the last couple of years. And not only was he the primary target for Drew Brees, his numbers were equally staggering as they were when Teddy Bridgewater was there at quarterback. And so, I guess, in terms of catches, I don't think that number is coming back again than what he had last year. But I mean, yards seems to be realistic here. He is an elite receiver in the game. I always wonder about a player like this. Will a team the next year come in and realize and finally be able to put a stop to this? But, you know, they did have 17 games last year to try and stop him, and they still couldn't. So, barring an injury, it would seem realistic that he could probably hit this number. That's sort of where I am on it.
Yeah, I think this number is probably spot on with your expectations, because 17 is very difficult to repeat just because everything has to break right. But Michael Thomas plays all world against anybody, and that's the thing. I mean, he's completely matchup proof. Some of the best corners in football last year tried to stop Michael Thomas, and they couldn't. And what's even more incredible is he put up 1,700 yards, and he didn't have Drew Brees the entire time. He had Teddy Bridgewater for a few weeks there in the middle of the season while Drew Brees was recovering from an injury. So Michael Thomas is as good as it gets. In terms of fantasy, he is, I think, the safest wide receiver investment. After the very elite running backs are gone, I think Michael Thomas should go right around number three or number four overall in PPR. And I think in some ways you can make a statement that is a safer investment, because the workload of McCaffrey the last couple of years, or the workload of Ezekiel Elliott in the last 4 years, and the injury last year of Saquon Barkley, all three guys ahead of him have questions that you can ask. Michael Thomas, I have zero questions, because I even saw what he did when Drew Brees wasn't there. So that answered that question, which is, what if the impending doom happens and all of a sudden Drew Brees turns into a pumpkin and he's 40-something years old and he can't be Drew Brees anymore? Well, Teddy Bridgewater is not Drew Brees and he was still pretty good, but I think 1,400 is a really outstanding season, and I think it's asking a lot to go over that number. So for me, I wouldn't go under because I respect Michael Thomas too much. This is another number I would stay away from. 2 years ago, this is basically the number he had. 2017, his rookie year, 1245. I mean, this guy is just an absolute beast since he came in the league. And not a lot of wide receivers, we talked about this yesterday too, come into the league and are this good this quickly. Michael Thomas is one of these guys, and he continues to prove it. And should Drew Brees go down, you got Winston throwing the football. And we all saw what Godwin...
Probably go over again there, too. Yeah.
You know, we all saw what Godwin and Evans did last year, so I'm not worried at all about Michael Thomas. Now, Craig, I'm going to ask you, do you think this is an opportunity to go under because last year was so huge, or do you think this is a stay-away number or an over? Like, where are you at with this one? Because for me, I think this is a really good number, and I don't see the opportunity where it's a lock to be over necessarily.
Yeah, I mean... I'm a little bit on the fence here. I would probably lean over because he could still get somewhere between 1,400 and 1,700 and accomplish the total that FanDuel has set. But, you know, I worry that teams start to figure out players a little bit. And this year, we're really going to find out.
Well, man, this is 3 years. They haven't figured out Michael Thomas yet.
Well, I mean, the numbers were really good the last couple of years, but you're talking about Hall of Fame talent last year. I mean, that's any receiver in the NFL could have a few years of 1,000 yards, but when you're talking about pushing 2,000, you know, that's an elite group of guys, or even 1,700, that's an elite group of guys. So we'll find out. I would lean over, but it wouldn't be something that I would love. But I would say that he probably could get to that number.
I would lean over as well, personally, because again, I believe in Michael Thomas. I believe that we got to interview him a couple years ago on our show here on this network, and he's just such an impressive guy, and he cares so much, and he works so hard. And some guys, they get by on talent, and there's other guys who have enormous talent and enormous work ethic, and he's just one of those guys. And that's why he shows up in those big time matchups against other corners. He shows up in the matchups against the better safeties and the better secondaries, because he looks at that as the challenge. Like, I'm going to put up 150 yards today on you. And that's the kind of player you want on your fantasy team, and that's the kind of player you want to invest in. But again, it's just really hard in the NFL to hit 1,500 receiving yards in a season. It's tough, but I'm not going to put it past him.
All right. So that's our thoughts on Michael Thomas of the New Orleans Saints. Now let's move over to the New York Jets, and let's touch on Denzel Mims, who was really the great hope right now at this point for the Jets at wide receiver. They have Rashad Perryman. But Mims is going to have to be a player for the Jets within the next couple of years for them to accomplish anything. His total is obviously low. 609 is it. And the FanDuel Sportsbook, it's risking 112 to win 100. At Baylor in 2019, he went over 1,000 yards. He actually went over this number, 609, in 2018 also, and in 2017. So that certainly bodes well for him. But, you know, the bad news for the Jets, the under is the only way. Under is probably the only way that I could look at it. And I mean, if Mims has a few 40-yard games, which is, you know, certainly realistic, he may not even hit 500 yards. So I don't know. I mean, I like the talent on this kid. I saw him play at Baylor the last couple of years, and there's no doubt that he has a chance to be special. But I could, you know, there's very few rookies that I would go over the total on. This probably is not going to be one of them.
No, I am in lockstep with you here. I would not go over this one at all. It's asking a lot. You just rattled off a couple wide receivers who've been in the league a few years and struggled to get this number. So we're putting a lot on a rookie to get at 6'10 or 6'09.5. And I like Mims as a talent, too. I mean, it's hard not to like him. The problem is I don't like the situation, and it's very difficult as a rookie to come in and blow the doors off. You have to be a Michael Thomas. You have to be in that kind of an ilk, and I don't know if Mims is quite that guy. And I also have to be sure that Sam Darnold is ready to take that next step, and Sam Darnold's ready to be the franchise quarterback, because this is a fork in the road for Sam Darnold. You know, the first year is your first year. You're a rookie. You struggle. You get set down to the bench with an injury, quote unquote, then he come back and he was better. Last year was basically an incomplete because of another fluky thing, getting the mono. He had some moments, but again, I don't think he's answered the question, is Sam Darnold your franchise quarterback going forward? This is it. This is the year to prove it. And until he does, I mean, there's no reason to be putting money on overs because you feel like it is, because you can't do this on a wing and a prayer. You're asking a lot. And more often than not, The Jets have not succeeded as an organization as identifying franchise quarterbacks. It's an unfortunate, sad tale, but we can go on and on for segment after segment about the failed Jet quarterbacks in this organization over the years. So I'm rooting for Sam Darnold to succeed, but at the same time, I think it's asking a lot for a rookie wide receiver to come in here and get over 600 yards. I don't see it. I think this is an easy under.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, he certainly could emerge. We've seen it happen before. He wouldn't necessarily have to do a lot to get over the number. He'd have to emerge as the top receiving option with the Jets. That certainly is possible, too.
Well, I think Crowder's got that. Well, here's the thing. It's Crowder and Le'Veon Bell, so he is third at best.
Yeah, but they gave Perryman a lot of money, too, no?
Okay, then he's fourth at best. So you're making my argument for me with Perryman. I tell you what, Breshad Perryman, we can go back to 2015 and talk about Breshad Perryman. Like, I mean, how long are we in for Breshad Perryman to be a thing? I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Well, last year he was. What do you mean?
He had a couple moments. I don't think a couple moments makes you a thing.
When he was the guy last year, he was really good. When he was given the opportunity to be the number one guy, he shined.
So how many targets are available per game for Denzel Mims to get over 600?
I don't think it's an over either, but I think this is
an easy under. Well, you just said he's fourth now.
There's no easy unders or easy.
He might even be behind the tight end, too. He could be behind Herndon or whoever else they're rolling out there at tight end. Just saying,
It's not easy. It's never easy. If it was easy, then we would be betting.
If he's healthy, over.
Show me how much money you're betting on this one.
Well, I just think this one's a lot easier. I'll bet on this one. Sure.
How much?
This is an easy one. I don't know.
Is it so easy that you'd bet $5,000?
If I had so much expendable income, sure.
What do you mean? It's so easy.
It's so easy. That's kind of a rude comment, but I mean, I don't want to go into that thing. But look, I think it's a very I don't give out advice that I wouldn't put my own money, and I'll give out advice.
I understand, but I'll put in a book
for everybody to read either that I don't back and try to prove. So I don't take it laissez-faire. Right, I take it very seriously, and I think when you look at it honestly, where he is in the pecking order, it's very difficult, realistically, mathematically, to reach that number.
There is no easy bet in sports. None. Zero. None. So saying that something is an easy bet.
That's fine. So it's easier than Michael Thomas. It's far easier than that one. It's far easier than the ones we did yesterday that I didn't want to touch, right? Did I want to touch any of the ones we did yesterday?
It doesn't matter what you thought about one bet or another. You're giving somebody advice.
I'm not here to give my opinion. What am I here to do?
You're here to do it and say, in my opinion, yeah, I believe that this is something that is an easy bet, but you got to back it up and bet it if that's the case.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Today, as we continue our dive into some NFL players, their potential props for 2020, and, you know, interesting that there aren't many really viable tight ends in football and in fantasy football. It's always like fool's gold, I think, to try and figure out who that next great tight end is going to be, because there just aren't really many of them. Of course, you know, Travis Kelce has you know, certainly stepped up and become an elite tight end in the league. There's no doubt that Darren Waller showed a lot last year. But in terms of consistency, it's really hard to find several players that do it year after year, which is why it's an interesting player today, because Zach Ertz is one of the few that have actually shown that.
Yeah, he has. He's been very consistent. And this comes from some teams just not utilizing the tight end position. So it's more of a system thing than anything. George Kittle, obviously, is in that upper tier. Waller did emerge, but then when Hunter Renfrow showed up in the slot and people realized that Waller was the one weapon you really had to stop, Waller's second half productivity really kind of took a huge downturn. Mark Andrews was very good last year. Evan Engram was hurt, unfortunately, last year. So the tight end position did get better year over year, because last year, after the top three, it was a huge amount of question marks. I think this year there's a much better middle ground where you can find some value with some guys who are going to get used on teams. And I think it's even deeper, too, when you go to the end and you find guys like Noah Fant. If you want to take a shot on Gronkowski, that's fine. But even guys like Tyler Higbee had some moments last year and I think will be used more in their offenses. But the problem is there's about half the teams in the league that don't utilize the tight end. Certain quarterbacks don't like to throw the tight end. Certain organizations don't value it in the systems that they're running. So you're already basically cutting the field in half. And then you have the Bears, who are actually paying, I think, seven different tight ends this year right now on their roster, which I don't understand how that works. And I am exaggerating, but not by much.
Yeah, I think that Ditka's going to play tight end for them this year. But Zach Ertz, you know, in terms of consistency, and, you know, he's been going in the second round usually of every fantasy draft, like on the back end, his yards, pretty much it's like par for the course again this year. 899.5 minus 112 on FanDuel. If you look at his numbers last year, barely went over that total. And he went over his total for sure on whatever FanDuel had his number for last year, because it certainly was going to be higher coming off an 1163. So essentially, my guess is the last three seasons, if you put a total on Ertz, he went over it 3 years in a row. I don't know that anybody had the expectation that he would have had 800 yards in 17, and I'd have to go back that far. And of course, you couldn't bet legally on FanDuel or DraftKings at that time either, and so it would only be the Westgate. I'd have to check that. But he is going over his total essentially every year. Eventually, age has to catch up. I get that. They finally look like they've added a little bit of talent offensively to that team. Sanders came on last year. Rager, who we talked about yesterday, could be a factor too. So for me, very similarly to a lot of the tight ends in the league, it's all going to come down to health for me if he goes over this total. I think if he plays 16 games, Ertz is getting 900 yards. And that's why it's very tough to predict, because injuries are a huge part of the game. He hasn't had a lot of serious injuries. In fact, he's had these injuries that you've heard about, and he's been questionable in the injury report many times, but he always ends up playing. So I would probably bank on 15, 16 games, and it feels like a potential over for me. Unfortunately, with tight ends, when they're done, it ends quickly, and then it's unders forever. So 899.5 is his number.
Yeah, I think this number is spot on. He barely went over this. And I know 2 years ago he obliterated this number, but I don't think you can really realistically think of it in that sense, because that was before they've made some other additions and before they had a better running game. And now with Jalen Rager there as well, there's a lot more options. And there's also another tight end on this team named Dallas Goedert. And last time I checked, he caught 58 balls for 607 yards last year. So that's another reason why I think this total is reasonable. And I think 900, he's still probably that go-to safety net guy. But at the same time, there's a lot of other opportunity here. So if anything, I might even be interested in the under. But I think, again, this is why Vegas does such a good job. They get you in there with right around where he probably should be. But I think, if anything, the emergence of Miles Sanders, Dallas Goedert, Jalen Rager, all of those guys, they actually maybe give you an opportunity for the under here as Carson Wentz continues to develop and as Carson Wentz starts to see the field better. I think you can always look at early quarterbacks and see the success that's tied with the tight end, because they tend to want to check down. They tend to want to, they can't see the field as much as they want to in terms of making quick and proper decisions. So immediately you look for the tight end, right? You can't see what's going on. You're not reading defenses properly yet. So as a quarterback continues to evolve, so too does the wide receiver numbers go up and so on and so forth. And then the tight ends tend to regress for the most part. Now, there are some offenses very different. Tom Brady and the Patriots, Rob Gronkowski was a freakish kind of weapon. Then they had Aaron Hernandez at the same time for a short period, right, running two tight ends. So that is a very unique thing. You don't see that happen very much in the NFL. This is a team that runs two tight ends out there quite a bit and utilizes them in the passing game. And that, I think, gives me pause. Does it give you pause that Dallas Goedert's there and all these other guys now as Carson Wentz looks forward to 2020?
It's just age and health, I think, for him. He's getting to that point in his career where the shelf life for a tight end, look, you can have a Gates career and a Tony Gonzalez career, or you can have a JerMichael Finley career. You just don't know.
Gates is a tricky one, though, because Gates wasn't a football player his whole life. Gates came to football much later, so he didn't have nearly the tread as some other guys. So I think Tony Gonzalez is a freak of nature, but I think the Gates one is always tough because you know, when you
Jimmy
don't
Graham. Well, I guess he was basketball too. So, yeah. But no, he played college football though. Actually, he played college football with Miami.
Did he play high school football, Jimmy Graham?
I'm not sure. He played at the University of Miami. I know that. How many receivers? I'm sorry. How many tight ends are, in terms of their odds, would you say have a good shot to go over this number for Ertz? Like, how many would you put Waller's number at 899.5 and say there's a chance he goes over? Would you put Kelsey's number will be higher than this?
Kelsey's number will be higher than this. Kittle's number will be higher than this.
I don't think any tight end. Yeah, Kittle's the other one. Yes.
But I don't think anybody else is going to get close to this 900. The only other guy for me, possibly, because again, I think that that's where Lamar is in his career right now, is Andrews, if he stays healthy through a whole season, which is, again, that's a question. But I think that's the guy for me because he was the go-to guy. And not just in the red zone. He was the go-to guy on third down. He was the go-to guy sometimes on first down. So that's the only other guy. There's an outside chance that Evan Ingram could hit this number because, again, young quarterback.
I don't trust that guy after last season.
I can understand you don't trust him. I can understand that. I think Waller was really good for half a season. And then when you get figured out, I mean, you always like to point that out when, you know, how is it when other teams react to you? Well, no one's reacted to Michael Thomas in 3 years because it's not like no one's game planning to stop Michael Thomas and they can't do it. They game plan to stop Darren Waller, and they did it very successfully in the second half. His numbers are not the same when you look at the splits first half of the season and second half of the season. Plus, they've brought in some other guys like Ruggs, too. So they're going to be a little bit more of a complete offense potentially this year. So
I got to look at Waller's numbers, but he went way over that total. Let's see here. For 2019, yeah, his total for the season was 1,100. And he finished 2 out of the last 3 games with over 100 yards. So, yeah, I would say that he would be very strongly another guy that, in fact, if there was a tight end to lead the league in receiving yards this year, it could be him. I would say he may end up having the highest total of all.
Well, look, he was a great story last year. I am hoping that it continues this year, but I wouldn't be betting him to be a 1,000-yard receiver again this year. I think that's asking a lot.
Okay. All right, let's take a look at Ertz as far as his player props on the touchdown side. Now, finally, we've reached some odds that are a little bit different. His under on 7.5 touchdowns is -130, so there's a little bit more risk there. In fact, quite a bit of risk there, risking 130 to win 100. And then over 7.5 touchdowns, +102, so you get a little bit of value there. Here are his touchdown totals the last 3 years, 6 last year, 8 in 2018, and then 8 in 2017, and of course he missed a couple of games that year too. So, man, this number to me is just a spot on. He'll be right around this number, it feels like, for 2020. This is a great number, 7.5.
Run away. Run very far away. Touchdowns are fluky. It's the same thing with quarterbacks too. We just did a whole podcast on this in the Black Book. We went through all the quarterback props with all of the passing yards, and that's passing yards is something you can wager on. There's a lot that goes into that you can control and understand. Touchdowns, you can't. I mean, how many times can there be fluky things like, you know, you get down at the 1 a bunch of times and then you end up right. Turn it around to the other guy. I mean, just if you don't think touchdowns are fluky, look at Aaron Jones last year and how many touchdowns he had. I mean, that's an incredible number. And I think some of us in the fantasy community had high hopes for Aaron Jones, but nobody thought he was going to score that many touchdowns. Madness. So basically this is the complete average of what he does. So if he plays to the back of his football card, Zach Ertz is going to have 7 touchdowns this year. It's, do you really want to spend money hoping and praying for that 0.5? Now, the only thing I can tell you is if you do believe that age and injury are going to start to creep in here, then maybe there's room for the under, but I wouldn't touch this number with a 10-foot pole. I think this is spot on.
Yeah, it looks good. The other part of it is that on any prop, on an individual game, it's one thing to lay 130 to win 100, but I would feel like there's probably some better props that you could dive into and find better odds on that. But certainly as we continue to go on, we'll take a look at some of the other possibilities for other players, and we'll do that on tomorrow's show as well, so make sure you tune in to see that. Before we kind of close out the NFL conversation, one other story that popped out yesterday was that the salary cap could go down for 2021 in the NFL. And that's something that's really interesting because it's gone consistently up and the NFL consistently makes more money. So something to keep an eye on when their next bargaining agreement comes up because, look, I can understand.
Well, I thought they just, didn't they just didn't they just wrap the latest bargaining agreement?
They did, but for some reason the cap's going to go down in 2021.
Well, it doesn't have to be part of the agreement if that happens. Like,
I'm not sure. Basically, that they're saying that the goal is to make sure the cap goes up or at worst stays flat. But essentially, talks have been going on very similarly in baseball and other sports too. That there's some sort of understanding that the revenue's got to go down, and so the cap goes down.
Sure. Oh well, that under the circumstances of it, yes. Okay. I wasn't sure if you know. But yes, that makes a complete amount of sense. By the way, Darren Waller, the fact that I was talking about before, we're talking about the receptions. He started the year, first four games with 33, then went down to 15, then just 18. He did rebound very well, as you point out, the last two games of the year. But there was a whole chunk there between October and November where he basically almost into halfway through December where he had about 600 yards total receiving. So that's, you know, again, much lower than
he finished very strong. So,
he did. He finished very strong in the last two games. But week 17, you always take with a grain of salt because most defenses check out and no one's playing any defense the last week of the season. They're all on their way home. So I'd have to go look and see who they played those last two games.
I mean, a meaningless game, but, you know, I mean, 7 catches for 100, 6 for 72, 8 for 122 toward the end of the year. I mean, I don't know. I guess we do not see that the same way. I mean, I feel like he's the top guy going into the year based on, I mean, if they made adjustments to him, he made adjustments right back because he was a beast in the last 5 games of the year. Last 5 games of the year, he had one bad game. So his last 5 games were just as good as his first 5.
That's all.
We'll be back with more fantasy sports today. Don't go away.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
And welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today, and we're joined by the legend, the Gridiron Scholar, covering college football. He was here with us all last football season, and believe it or not, soon enough, there will be a college football season in tow of some kind. John Lobb joins us here on the show, the Gridiron Scholar, covering college football. He has his new rankings out. We'll get to that as well, maybe a preview of what could come this summer. John, thanks for coming on Fantasy Sports Today. It's good to see you. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. You know, it's now college football season in my book. Once we turn to June, that's when I really start amping up. And I'm more optimistic than I have been over the last 2 months that we should have a season.
All right. Well, I'm hopeful for that too, John. And I think one of the things that's important is to get the kids back to school. I mean, that's going to be an important factor into that. And I know that that's part of what you do as well. I don't think that people realize that also is that fantasy isn't your only job, correct?
Yes, it is true. I am a full-time high school teacher. I am an adjunct professor at a local community college. And my daughter actually just finished her freshman year at UConn. So I'm pretty familiar with the educational system or up in the Northeast, at least.
For sure. And certainly we're looking for it all over the place, not only in the Northeast, but in the Southeast as well. So when we last spoke, John, we headed toward a national championship that featured, you know, certainly one of the great quarterbacks and great seasons that we've seen of all time, and Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence. And, you know, certainly I thought Clemson would have came ahead in that game. That was the last time that we've had a college football game. How much do you think will change going into the 2020 season? Do you think that I mean, it's going to be hard for LSU, obviously, to repeat, but do you think that Clemson has to be considered a favorite? Is Alabama a team, again, that's going to be right up there at the top? And maybe who are some of the other teams that we're going to be looking at very early on in the season when we get to August that's going to be a contender for the title?
So the first, I just published my rankings about a week ago, the top 25. And I'm kind of old school, Craig. Until the champion's defeated, they're at the top. So I'm going to put the Tigers there. And I understand there's changeover. I get all that. But, man, I'm not going to take them out of that spot. Now, I still have Clemson number 2 right now. I think they are loaded. Now, I'm looking more into that Justin Ross injury, which which is a complete shame because I liked him as a Devy prospect, NFL prospect. But Clemson has historically, since the last decade, are loaded the wide receiver position. I think they can overcome it, and they do have a lot of defensive pieces. Now, Ohio State, I have at number three still. They are loaded, Craig. Man, they have, out of those, they have a returning quarterback, Justin Fields. He's almost as good as Trevor Lawrence. Not as good, in my opinion, but very close. And then Alabama. But believe it or not, Craig, at number five, I'm on Team Florida. And I'm trying not to get too optimistic. But with Georgia, I think having a lot of changes. With Jake Fromm moving on, they also have DeAndre Swift moving on the offense. They have a new quarterback. I like Florida. I'm trying not to be too bullish.
You can do it. Do it. It's fine.
I think this is their chance to really make a statement. And they have, I think there's two big games. They have to play LSU and Georgia. Right. And if they get through those two big games, there's a very good chance Florida ends up 12-1. And into the playoffs.
Yeah, and they'll be favored against Georgia this year. So I think they will. So, certainly I think that there's a chance of that. LSU always dangerous, but again, without the quarterback, that's going to be something that we'll have to keep an eye on. So that's the reality perspective of this. The fantasy perspective is always interesting. I know that you and I, the last couple of years, have competed against each other in best ball drafts. And, certainly I always enjoy that, and I always enjoy seeing at the end of the season which were my good picks and which were the players that I was just completely off on. I know your new rankings just came out, so let's kind of dive in a little bit here, and I think this will also give people an idea as to who the best college football players in the nation are offensively.
Absolutely, my friend. And, I like looking back, too, and the interesting thing about college fantasy football, you can be much more wrong than you are in NFL because there's so many teams and so many players, right? But right now, I think Justin Fields of Ohio State's the number one pick. He is the first player in Big Ten history to have 40 touchdown passes throwing and 10 touchdowns running. He was just simply spectacular. It's amazing he couldn't get on the field at Georgia, but they did have Fromm, and I understand why they went with Fromm, but man, Justin Fields is special. Now, I have Sam Ellinger number two, and I know he's been disappointing, and I understand that, but if you look at the numbers that he has put up at Texas, he's basically started 2 3/4 seasons. I think he's got 30 starts under his belt. He's been great. He also beat out Shane Bouchel as a freshman.
He's forced Bouchel to transfer.
Yeah.
At some point, and listen, with him, I think, he does a really good job within the short passing game, John. But, yes. And maybe it's part of their skilled position players. I'm not so sure. But that's kind of always been my hesitation with Ellinger.
Yeah, Ellinger does not look good on film in the deep part of the game. I completely agree with you on that, which limits his NFL potential. But let's see the growth that is going to occur. But I like him because, Craig, in college fantasy football, running is everything. And Sam Ellinger is dangerous near the goal line. Now, The young man who's a challenge, Spencer Rattler of Oklahoma, he's coming in. He should be the starter. Now, the last three quarterbacks for the Sooners have been transfers. Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts. Rattler is the guy cherry-picked from Lincoln Riley to start at quarterback. Fascinating to see what he does right away there. Then I have Trevor Lawrence at number four. And I'm sure you've seen Sam Howell at North Carolina State, Craig.
Yeah, we're waiting on him. This could be a game changer for them.
Yes, I think North Carolina, he's the right quarterback. And they're nasty good, believe it or not, at the wide receiver position. I think they might challenge Clemson. I don't think they can win the ACC, but I do think they're better. And then I got a bunch of guys like Brock Purdy, Iowa State, Keaton Slovis, USC, Spencer Sanders, Oklahoma State.
We're just doing quarterbacks right here.
Just quarterbacks.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure because I didn't hear Travis Etienne's name yet, and I'm thinking, And I'm thinking, wait a second here. He's got to be either the number one pick, the number two pick, or the number three pick in all of college football this year, I think.
Yes, I'm
but,
sorry.
But anyway, to end on the quarterbacks, look, Sanders has been up and down. Certainly USC has shuffled in quarterbacks in and out too, so it's kind of hard to get a little bit of gauge on that. But I think it's pretty clear with the guys that you mentioned at the top. Look, Fields has the running ability. You got to add that to the equation for sure. And I think that's a really good observation with Oklahoma. For anybody doing a college football draft, fantasy draft, do not sleep on whoever their quarterback is. I don't care what his name is. Riley has made these guys into superstars, and I don't think that they'll play any defense anyway in that conference. So no. There'll be a lot of throwing there. Okay, so let's go over now to running back. Is ETN number one, or did I miss something here?
No, in college fantasy football, you have to just – it has to be touches. The problem with Clemson, they're going to blow people out. And what happens is in the second half of games, he's going to have limited carries. Now, I have him as the number third ranked running back right now, just because opportunities will not be there in the fourth quarter. I have Chuba Hubbard. He's great.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Forgot about him. Yeah.
He's so good. Now,
how many times are they going to give him the ball this year?
He might get 350. I mean, he's going to get loaded touches. Yeah. And then I have Jarrett Patterson of the Buffalo Bulls at number two. Now, in college fantasy football, when you have the group of five teams, they do not have as much talent across the board, less likely for blowouts. The opportunities are at a greater percentage for a young running back. So Jarrett Patterson, two. ETN is three. My number four is Kenneth Gainwell of Memphis. You didn't get to see Kenneth Gainwell, my friends. What a spectacular running back he is. He's a true sophomore this year. And rounding out my top five is Najee Harris of Alabama. Wow, yeah. I cannot believe the Crimson Tide got him to come back.
I know. Yeah, monster year coming for him, for sure.
Monster year.
All right, so moving from running backs, let's go over to the wide receiver position. And certainly with Ross out of the mix, he was probably a top three guy. So who replaces him?
So right now, I'm going to put Rashad Bateman, Minnesota, at number one. Couple reasons why. I think Minnesota is going to be more likely to be in close games. What does that mean? He stays on the field for a longer amount of time, which means more targets, more opportunities. Number two is Ja'Marr Chase out of LSU. Craig, Ja'Marr Chase might be a top three pick in the draft next year.
I think so, now, yeah.
He's unbelievable. He's better than Justin Jefferson, which I can't believe I'm saying that and how
no,
good Justin.
No, I think that's easy to say. I thought, listen, Jefferson was okay. I thought he got inflated a little bit after the combine, to be honest.
Yes, he did get after the combine moved up. So Ja'Marr Chase is spectacular. If you have not heard, Sage Surratt at Wake Forest is a really good college fantasy football player. Kind of in that third to fourth round NFL draft prospect, but Wake Forest, the game script is going to be beneficial for the Demon Deacons. So he's going to be on the field. They should be playing from behind a lot. Now, again, we go to Crimson Tide. It's unbelievable. Devonta Smith is my fourth-ranked wide receiver. The talent that they had last year at Alabama at the wide receiver position is unbelievable. Now, Mac Jones is no Tua Tagovailoa.
I don't think you got it even close on that name, John, but we know who you're talking about.
Tua.
Was he a wrestler? Tua.
Smith is good. So Smith should be able to garner a lot of targets. And my number five is Rondell Moore out of Purdue. The reason I don't like Moore, a little bit more, he has competition. They have another young kid, if you don't know, David Bell at wide receiver, who's going to demand targets also. So you're going to have maybe Rondell Moore gets the larger percentage than David Bell, but he won't get that like 42% that you see at the college level sometimes.
Sure. We're just about out of time, John. Always great catching up with you. Before you go, where can we catch all of your rankings for the college fantasy football season?
Everything's on FanTrax right now. It's all there. And I do it with my partner, Justin Heisley. So you have both my rankings, his rankings, and the two of them combined for you.
Awesome. John Lobb, Gridiron Scholar, of course, on Twitter. Always fun to talk to, catch up. Nobody more passionate about college fantasy football than John Lobb. And when we get to August and we have our draft, we'll have it right here for you on Fantasy Sports Today. Johnny, always great to catch up with you. Stay safe. I hope your family is well. And certainly we look forward to catching up again soon. Thanks again for coming on. Appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you, Craig. You too. I hope your family's well.
Everybody is. Thank you so much. All right, John Lobb here with us on Sports Grid on Fantasy Sports Today. Again, head on over to FanTrax to catch John's rankings for the 2020 season. And hey, look, with the month of July coming up and all this craziness going on with baseball and some of the other sports not playing maybe in the early month of July, maybe it's time to head on over and check out some college football, perhaps. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. We'll be back with more Fantasy Sports Today in just 2 minutes. Don't go away.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
And thanks again to Johnny Lobb for coming on the show. We'll bring back Johnny as we get closer to college football season. Those of you who are looking to get into some best balls and, potentially maybe college football will play their full season. Maybe they'll play in front of fans. And look, their season starts in late August, not September. So, going to have to get some clarification on what the situation will be for college. But certainly there's still a lot of talent out there. And don't play any college football fantasy with the exception of the one league that I'm in with John every year. We get a bunch of people just to join, and I think we played for like $10. And, I honestly don't even know how I did the last couple of years. But it's always fun just to look at the names and then follow them throughout the season. And that's all I'll mess with college fantasy football. But in terms of the actual games, I'm much heavy into that. Okay, so the NBA at this point looks like they are going to be the first sport to officially announce a plan and being back. I know the NHL came out a couple of weeks ago and gave us some really good hope, but it was very open-ended, and they didn't have a place, and there was like a sort of plan, and it was like all well and good. And listen, this takes nothing away, by the way, from NASCAR, who have been racing. And if you guys have been missing those races, you're missing a lot of fun. It's been great to see them back out there. We've had some great charity golf. Of course, there is some soccer going on across the world as well, and the KBO and some of the other leagues are happening. But in terms of the big major sports, it looks like the NBA potentially could be the first one back. And there are some really intriguing things here that we're going to have to sort out. And first and foremost, I would guess that these games in Orlando are going to be going nonstop. But the other part of this is that the Bucks could potentially play the Magic in the first round of the playoffs. And I mean, I'm guessing because there's no fans there, it's not a huge home court advantage for Orlando, but it's not really what Milwaukee had dialed up, being the number one or number two seed in the entire NBA and then having to go on the road. But this is what it's going to require to end up play.
Well, I mean, the only advantage, I guess, is sleeping in your own bed. But I don't know if that's allowed. So, I mean, maybe there is no advantage. And this is kind of the most fascinating thing, because this is the playoffs in a vacuum, in a neutral place for the most part. No fans, no things. So it's really about whose team is better. And basketball, like every other sport, has huge momentum swings and moments where the crowd really makes a huge difference, especially in the playoffs. And now you're taking that element out of it, and I don't know what replaces it. I don't know if it's a certain style player that replaces it. I don't know if it's a certain kind of coach that can dominate that sort of thing, if it's going to just be just sheer will and talent winning out. But when you're taking out in the playoffs fans and that momentum, and you're having everything in a neutral place where it's just you and the court and the ball, that's going to be fascinating. In a lot of ways, it's going to be fascinating television to watch from a sports point of view, but also from a psychological standpoint, because I don't feel like that's something that we have ever seen before. And you and I both know those home court advantages, home field advantages in some sports mean everything. I mean, up until recently, how difficult was it to go in and win in December in New England? Statistically, I mean, it's pretty almost impossible. There's been a lot of places where it's just, you just don't want to go anywhere near certain buildings at certain times. And now when you're taking that out of it, I'm curious what your thoughts are. Like, who do you think has the best advantage? Is it the team with the best talent now, or is it the team that can make their own momentum and kind of build on it in a game without that crowd, without that backing, without that swing?
Yeah, I mean, with everything that has gone on in this country, both with this pandemic and all of the things that have happened in terms of socially and the injustices that have happened, with the way that he has commented, with the Last Dance being on, there is absolutely no way I'm betting against LeBron James in this scenario. I mean, I don't know anything, but if there was a guess for me on this one, he would be the guy that I would go with here. And of course, they have Brow too, and they have a good team in LA, mm-hmm. and they had a great season, and they got off to a great start. And look, I know that they're more or less chalk. I mean, the Bucks are plus 240, the Lakers are plus 270, Clippers are plus 340 to win the championship, and the other ones are more or less long shots. They give Houston somewhat of a shot, but you know, when they have to play defense at the end of a game, I don't know how that's going to go. I would not go against LeBron James.
Do you remember?
I think LeBron James has got to be so motivated. Right. You know, going into this thing, and
well, he's a massive personality that can dominate on his own, and a massive talent. I mean, that's a combination. Do you remember in The Last Dance that Dream Team practice where you heard all yes. the things that they were saying back and forth? I don't know about you, but I would love if there was an alternate broadcast that you could hear what they were saying to each other, and if back and forth, because you can actually hear it because there's no one else in the building. That would be fascinating to hear the inner workings. And obviously, you know, it's viewer discretion advised. But I don't know about you. Wouldn't that make the games even more intriguing for you if they broadcast that even on, like, the streaming version of whoever was carrying the playoffs?
I mean, anything would be interesting. I hope that they add something to it. But for them, the NBA probably sits in the room and says, if we do the bare minimum, it's enough. Like, I don't know that they're going to need to do anything except for play. But, yeah, I mean, with everything that's happened and considering that the things that LeBron has gone through and the silly conversation about who's the greatest and all that, I mean, it's all fine. But LeBron basically left an unbelievable situation in Miami where, as he announced, you know, not one, not two, not three, four, five, six, and he fell short of that for sure and left on bad terms with Pat Riley and now. So I know it also didn't end great in Cleveland too, and this is going to be part of LeBron James's documentary is all the leaving, you know, Cleveland and Miami and then Cleveland again in LA. I mean, that's part of his story for sure. But this is not a guy in this situation, as tough as it has gotten with everything that's going on in this country, I gotta believe that he'll find a way to will his way into a championship here. And look, they're not the favorite. So,
I think Giannis should be favorite, though. Let me tell you, man, and I love the Giannis story. Like, as somebody who is coming back to basketball, I have nothing but respect for LeBron. If he wins another title, it's still not going to put him in the – to me, it's Jordan and everybody else. And that's not a knock on everybody else, but it's just – it's again, my opinion as a sports fan, as a sports analyst. And I would be happy for LeBron if he won this, because this is another chance for him to show, hey, look, I've won everywhere I've gone, and that's an important thing too. But the Giannis story is such an incredible one, of this kid and coming from Greece and all these things. And, you know, I saw the big profile. I want to say it was 60 Minutes that did the huge profile on him a few years ago. And it was just absolutely fascinating. And you can't help but love this guy. And you know, he's so fun to watch play the game. I know the Rockets and are in there as well. And, you know, the Clippers and some other teams here that have a good shot. But, I mean, at the end of the day, if we get LeBron and Giannis in a final, I mean, that would be pretty good, right? I think that's some good TV for the league, right? Do you think that's what they want?
Think so. I think anything would be great.
Right, but look, we've got it.
I mean, I don't care if it's Denver. I mean, honestly, like, I mean, give me anybody in the finals, and I could care less. Yeah, look, not a lot of championship history there for the Bucks, and sometimes you got to learn how to lose before you get to winning. Maybe that is the case. Maybe they end up winning the championship, but I'm just not going to, you know, go against the Lakers in this situation.
I also wonder how the lack of travel affects, you know, like, it's different because I don't know what the stamina is, people building up stamina.
Well, maybe Kawhi Leonard will play all the games then.
Well, I wonder about the lack of, you know, getting on the planes and traveling and what that does for people.
That's another thing too. Maybe I shouldn't rule out the Clippers either because of Kawhi Leonard being on there and potentially playing in every playoff game. I mean, that's a fair. I mean, he really carried the Raptors in a way that we haven't seen, like LeBron did, like Michael Jordan did.
Well, like the greats do. That's what they do.
Kawhi did. So maybe I shouldn't rule him out of the conversation, but I would guess that it would be Milwaukee, LA, and LA. Those would be, you know, sort of the three teams that I would.
Is there anybody else from the East that you could, that you think has a legitimate shot there?
No. I don't think so.
I kind of agree. I think it's the Bucks to lose there, you know. And I feel bad. I mean, look, if you're a Bucks fan, you're happy if they get there, and if they win, you're, I think, over the moon. But it is kind of tough. Like you said, it's a lot of winning there for the Milwaukee Bucks. It's such a shame that you don't get to hoist that trophy in your home court. And, you know, are you going to get to do a parade or anything like that? Like, all those things that go along
in
with
December, winning, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe.
Unfortunate part about all of this is that it could have ended up being a forced retirement for Vince Carter, because the Hawks are not involved in this, and this is the team that he's going to end up finishing with. And, of course, he'll be a Hall of Famer for sure the second that he's eligible. He'll be a first-ballot guy without a doubt. And I don't know. Most people feel like this is it, like he is going to retire after this year. But I've said that about Udonis Haslem for the last 5 years, and he continues to come back. Maybe Carter will come back for another season. What's interesting for Carter is that, you know, some of the teams that he's played with have been good, but sometimes he's just, like, going to any team. I'm surprised that he didn't, like, shack up with the Lakers.
You would think you would just kind of latch on somewhere and just, you know, try to get some hardware. But I don't know. I mean, as long as they're paying and you love to play and your body hasn't completely betrayed you. See, that's the thing. It's, I'm sure there's a lot of guys who would love to keep playing, but their bodies just physically won't let them. And Vince Carter is, you know, an incredible athlete, and he's taken very good care of himself, and he's been relatively lucky on that front. I mean, Grant Hill, I'm sure, would have loved to have played 20 years too. It doesn't happen for everybody. And that's the thing, I guess. You know, if you love to do something and they're paying you a lot of money to do it, why would you want to stop until you absolutely had to? I get it. It's the Tom Brady syndrome. It's the Drew Brees syndrome. It's Peyton Manning. It's all those. And Peyton Manning knew when it was time. Peyton Manning said it. He's like, I knew exactly when it was, and then I knew it was time to get out. Maybe he just hasn't figured it out that it's the time. Maybe he hasn't had that moment yet, Vince.
Yeah, 22 years for Vince.
22 years is a long time, man. Who's played longer? We got to start thinking about, like, who's
Kareem? I mean, Kareem is the first one I always go to, but I don't know. Maybe he didn't even play.
I don't know, man. The 20 plus years in the NBA is no joke. just think of how many times that guy has run
Dirk
up and down.
Dirk played 20. I know. I think we did this on a previous show, Brett. Right? I think we went through. Yeah, 21 for Dirk.
21. Yeah. Wow. God, that's an incredible thing. I didn't realize he was that long, too.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, everybody who watched today, for sure. We appreciate it. We'll be back for another edition tomorrow on the program. Of course, Gray Albright will join us on the show as we close out the week and we get you ready for the weekend. So I want to wish you guys a very safe day. Make sure you guys take it easy, but stay on the grid. We got some great programming coming up a little bit later. Scott Farrell's going coast to coast. That show is live, as well as in-game live after that. So stay tuned for that. We will be back tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Eastern right here on Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. Make sure you have a good one. For Joe Pizzapia, I'm Craig Mish. Thanks again to Danny and Ryan and, of course, our producer, Brett. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll see you at 11. Have a great night, everybody.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.